This is remarkable. Have everybody here.
Well, we don't have kids to get ready anymore.
Yeah, that makes a difference.
We can't sleep late anymore.
Yeah. Right up the sound of rebirth.
That's right. Might as well just come over the building, right?
Does a person count as a kid?
Don't know how much trouble they are. You have to get them dressed for church?
Well, you got to get them dressed and fed and
all right.
Taken care of.
Sure, lead us in a prayer, please.
Our great God and Father in heaven, we humbly come before you now, Father. So thankful for this morning. So thankful for this morning that we can be together as we continue our learning, continue our studying, continue our strengthening and growing our inner self as we know our outer self, this body is decaying, Father. Thank you for the rest you provided for us last night. We thank you again for this opportunity. Be with all the teachers and the students here today as we continue to learn and grow closer to each other and help to bring somebody else to that. We ask all these prayers in your son's name. Amen.
Yeah, I'm going to back up just a little. There was just one more thought I wanted us to look at to the reference to grandparents that we talked about last week. I got some quotations, and one of them was this. A child needs a grandparent, anybody's grandparent, to grow a little more security into an unfamiliar world. And the thought is here, I think, that some children really just don't have any grandparents. And somebody can become a grandparent to a child. I can remember several when I was growing up. They talk about the disadvantage of being a preacher's kid, but there are some advantages in being a preacher's kid. And I could name a virtual grandfather, grandmother. Come on in. There's one more chair over there. I guess I'm up here. A virtual grandparent to me. And I just dearly love them. There's one lady in Birmingham, I recall that I would go back to see her every time I was in Birmingham. And she'd give me a dollar a year. And that was big in those days, I tell you. That's like a $20 bill today. But I always wanted to go by to see her, write her notes, because she was just kind of a grandparent to me. Another couple there in Birmingham, that as long as they lived, I would go by to see them. Kenita, I took Kenita by so they could meet who I married, because I thought I was really special to them. And if you see somebody that's like that, at your age, and my age, we can reach out to a young person and make a big difference in their lives. And I think that's an important point that we ought to make along this line. Children love older people who give them attention. Sometimes we think children don't care, but when you give children real attention, they just eat it up. They just love it. We have three or four little children that come around and speak to Kenita particularly. And it means a lot to her, but it's because she's given them some attention in the past due to some occasion, some circumstance that made it possible for her to do more than she normally would do. Okay, we're ready for David now. And somehow I thought when I prepared this, it might be the weakest lesson in the whole series, but the more I studied it, the more application I got and saw in my own life that I found it was useful. But first, let's read through our our text. Therefore, we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man be renewed in the light of our day. For our light affliction, which is not our own, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal way of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. If we memorize that and bring it to mind over the whatever time God gives us, it will be worth everything this class has accomplished. You just think about that text. And it's exactly what all of us need as we grow older. We mentioned that there are three outstanding frustrations of getting old, and we're mentioning these particularly because of the application we can make with reference to David. One is having to discontinue things that we once did well and took a little pride in, and that's not wrong, to realize I can do something maybe that somebody else doesn't do and could have opportunity to do. But once you get to the point you can't do that, it's difficult. Then being unable to reach goals that we'd hoped to reach, things we intended to do, and it just never was possible. And we keep hoping we can, but life is quickly passing by, and we just finally come to realize, I just can't do this. It's the one goal I'm not going to achieve. And then sickness that interferes with important responsibilities. All right, we've gone through the life of David, he prepared the lesson, and seen how he dealt with these kinds of problems. Upon what was David's name built? Anybody?
Military.
Well, military.
In the people's eyes, anyway.
Yeah. He was a warrior. He was a warrior. In fact, he was brought to the attention of Saul particularly, but of others as well. Even the Philistines had heard the song that David, that Saul had killed his thousands, but David his 10,000. So he was noted for his killing power. Of course, he wanted to do it to the glory of God, I think, as a rule. But he was a warrior. That's what he was known for. How did Hushai describe him in 2 Samuel?
He's an experienced soldier.
He and his men are mighty men. They're mighty men. All right, but what happened to David in 2 Samuel 21:15-17? Who wants to answer me? Tell us that. Anybody? Miles?
He became weary of being his men fought against the Philistines.
Yeah, and particularly it was the giant one. And he got weary. And the giant said, "Oh, I'm going to kill this guy. He's been famous for what he did to one of us, maybe my brother. And I'm going to take care of him." So what happened? All right, he had to be rescued. They had to rescue him, or he would have died. He was not in full strength. He was faint. And so he had to be rescued. And what did his men decide or determine? You just can't go out with us anymore to battle. What? My fighting days are over? This is where I made my fame. This is where I've become known. They're over, David. No more of this. No more of this. Okay, did David refuse a decision? We don't know. We don't know the timing of this exactly. That's one of the problems. But we assume that he accepted their decisions.
They were tactful, though, in a way. I mean,
yeah.
It says so that the light in Israel won't be extinguished.
Right, right.
Kind of highlight his other usefulness.
That's right, and that's what we want to see. If you can't do one thing well, there are other things you can do. And sometimes the other things you can do are more valuable than what you thought was your greatest contribution. I've seen that in my life, and I'll mention that in a few moments. I've seen that in my life. Things I thought were just exactly what I ought to do, what I could do, maybe, and the door just closed. And so I had to do something else which possibly was more valuable than what I had really wanted to do. They called him the Lamp of Israel. Do you remember what Elisha called Elijah when he was leaving? And even a king called him that. The chariots of Israel and the horsemen thereof. That, in other words, he was the strength of the country, not because he was a great warrior, Elijah, but because of the spiritual input he had into the life of Israel. So it's not sometimes what we think we do that's most useful, but what we do even when the door is closed to doing what we think is useful. What are some valued skills that we have to get up as we get older? Tell me one.
Not having the energy to teach children.
All right, to teach children. All right. that's something, that's a good example. You enjoy teaching the children,
yeah,
but it takes energy to teach children. In fact, I had to give it up pretty much some time ago. I marvel at Philip, I went to watch him with the children, that all the energy he puts into it. I just don't have that anymore. And children have to have it. But they go to sleep on me now.
I understand why.
Barry, that's a good example. Okay, give me one more. Give me something else. Well, they take away your key. I still have mine. I don't know how long I'll have them. I used to close meetings over in Alabama, sometimes in Mississippi, and drive all the way home after service on Wednesday night or Friday night, when it wasn't the thing about it. Now my children won't even let me get out of town alone. I don't know what they think I'll get into, but they insist on going with me, and they're willing to drive too, for some reason. that's one of those things you just have to, you used to do, but you just can't do it anymore.
So I think the you know, the interaction with salespeople and people who take advantage of it and all that, just management kind of in a defensive way of affairs. I see that a lot. Like there's a lot of scams that aim at older people. Why is that?
Yeah.
And maybe because their defenses, or maybe their ability to see through something that's not right has been diminished.
That's a good example.
I've known some friends who had parents who, you know, send all their money to the Philippines or Africa or something, some dishonest scheme. Yeah.
Good. That's a good example. Yes, sir.
My mother, she has trouble, her hands shaking.
Yeah,
right. She
yeah.
says, I can't even sign a check, or I can't write anything I want to put on. So you have to do all my writing for me.
I understand that. Yeah. I understand that. Yes, sir.
Okay,
yeah.
So New Amsterdam, which is a medical TV show that comes on every week, there was an older physician, a surgeon, who developed a shake, and one of the other physicians saw that happened, so he turned him over to the medical board. And so this physician was not allowed to practice surgery anymore, but he became a consultant, which was great use of his knowledge. They said, your hands might not be valuable, but your brain and your experience is so valuable.
Good.
We need
good.
To continue to use that.
Kenita? I'm going to report you, but I'm going to let you report yourself. What is it you used to do that you can't do now that worries you so much?
Well, it takes a long time for me to make a list like that.
She said it takes a long time for her to make that list. But I'm going to tell you one of the things. We used to have so many people in the home for dinner, and kept a lot of people overnight, and the nice house the church supplied for us was one of those reasons we could do that, and we just can't do it anymore. And it did work. Anytime we've got a meeting coming up, she wonders why we can't keep the preacher. Well, we just can't persecute the saints like that. That wouldn't be fair. It wouldn't be right. So it did worry her that we can't do what we used to. I used to love to teach auditorium classes. I remember when we, as elders, would talk about it, Willis West would say, I just hate it. I thought, well, I don't hate it. I enjoy it. But I can't do it anymore because I can't hear what's going on from the students. So I wind up in a class like you. but I'm enjoying being you so much. Yes.
I was going to say, kind of with what Marty was saying, it made me think of that. It's like my parents, technology is always... You know, my mother couldn't even do a microwave. But, and then as it got, my dad couldn't, and then that's when scams come in because they don't understand how things work. And somebody says, well, that doesn't work, and you need us. That's, you know.
Yeah.
So with the technology, who knows what's going to happen in 20 years?
Yeah, absolutely.
We won't be up with it. I know that. I won't.
If it wasn't
really
for the express button,
yeah.
I'd have trouble with a microwave.
They really do pursue seniors.
Yes. I could testify to that. Telephone calls. Yeah. There's all kinds of things that you want to take advantage of.
Yeah, we sure have to be careful, don't we?
Yeah, and don't say yes to anybody about anything, not even your name, because they say they can record that and attach it to something else. So.
Right.
So, related to your question, I suppose that means that there's some measure of management of our affairs that we're just going to have to get help with.
Yep. Linda?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing what Marty said. You really need to communicate with your children or have someone who's an advocate for you. Mom got a phone call one time and it was Sears saying she owed money for legal advice. And I said, I need to see the paperwork on that.
Yeah.
And she signed it.
Because
their sons are
always
there.
Yeah.
Why did you do that?
It's amazing. And that's something that we need to get help with.
That's right.
All right. Well, let's move on.
I was going to say, too, I mean, our hearing goes, and so somebody to go with you into medical things that hears being said.
Those are good. I found a lot of practicality in this, in dealing with David. Okay. Well, it's been difficult for him, but we assume he accepted the advice and didn't insist on going to battle, but using his talents, his spiritual leadership in better ways. All right, well, let's look at another one. That's the inability to reach desired goals, and I know you have the answers to this, but according to 2 Samuel 7, 1 through 7, what did David want to do?
The house for the Lord.
Mm-hmm. And that seemed even to Nathan like a noble idea. That I live in a house of cedar and the ark of God is in a tent. Well, it doesn't make much sense. I've seen brethren sometimes that were very eager to have their own things well, but seem to have no concern at all about the Lord's people, the Lord's house, which is not a temple. Not a building, but with the church. Okay. He wanted to build a house for God. Was this what God desired him to do?
No.
That was not the job God had for him. And sometimes we just have to realize that that's the case. On what basis did God reject David's plan? There were at least two, I think. What were they?
God had not asked.
All right. He had not asked for that. When did I ask you to do that? Sometimes the things that we think just would be really, really great ideas, we need to ask, has God asked us to do that? Is that God's idea or my idea? You remember the question Jesus asked about the baptism of John. What was that? Is it from heaven or is it from men? And it may look like a wonderful project, but if it's not something God has asked for, it's from men, and it's not worthy of pursuit. All right? This was not a bad thing, but God said, you just let me ask for it what I want. What's the second one? Before he gives you that, I know you knew it already. Because he was a man of blood, and that's emphasized in 1 Chronicles 22, 7 through 9, that his work was different from what God intended. Did God intend for someone else to do it?
Yes.
Yeah, it was a good work, all right, but it was not a work for David to do. Mm-hmm. It was a work that someone else could do. And who did he say would do it? All right, David's son. So if David said, all right, I can't do it, then I'll just let him do it. I can't do it, I'll just let him do it. Is that just the attitude he took?
Yeah.
And it's easy for us to take that attitude. If we find ourselves barred from something we wanted to accomplish, and it said, well, we're going to have somebody else to do it. This just brought to mind an illustration. When I was young, I was still in high school, the elders asked me to leave singing for a meeting. And there was a man there who really felt he was the one that ought to be doing it. And so it made him mad. It made him angry. And so the next time they asked him to be singing at service, he said, no, can't do it all the time, I'm not going to do it. and he wouldn't leave singing at all. His feelings were hurt. Marty?
I wonder, too, if David didn't have, and this is just pure speculation, but I was thinking about this yesterday. That temple forever became known as Solomon's Temple.
That's right.
And, you know, and really in those times, what the king would do would be to, you know, build some edifice that would remain. But there's some evidence of David had somewhat of a palace. I mean, he mentions his own house was nice, but it's nowhere today. It never became anything famous. But in a way, he enabled that. We don't hardly remember that he collected a lot of the materials and made the plans and gave all the instructions, and yet forever it's known as Solomon's Temple, not a legacy of King David.
That's interesting. And when the one thing that has become prominent is the House of David. Mm. But what house was that? The one he wanted to build? Or the one he didn't, it was a house that God gave him, which, like the House of Windsor, of course, it means a family, a dynasty that went on. And even to this day, they found an inscription up at Dan, I believe, about someone from the House of David. And that's the first use of David's name archaeologists have found. But it's emphasized the House of David, which God built for him, rather than the house he wanted to build for God. That's an interesting thought. All right, four things that David did to expedite the building of the temple. He said, if I can't do it, I'm going to do everything I can do to help my son to build it. What First Chronicles 28 mentioned?
He gave all the plans.
All right, he gave the plans. And Marty's point is rather interesting. David gave the plan, but it was Solomon's temple. But that's all right. That's all right. And he gave even the instructions for the organization of the singers and the priests. And so it was an amazing thing. And when the Queen of Sheba came and saw all of this, she was just astounded. But much of it was David's doing, really. And later, after the captivity, when they came back and organized things, it was as David had instructed. All right, what else did he do?
He provided assets. He provided
great
gold,
assets.
The silver, the bronze.
Huge amounts. And when you read about the temple, it's amazing how much gold was in it. Probably the richest building ever built. May very well have been. And gold and silver just everywhere. And much of it was what David had collected as a result of the conquest that he had made, the tribute that had been paid to him. So he gave money. What else did he do? Anybody get what I have in mind for that?
I presume it was maybe money for the wages, yes, of those that would
go. Okay.
Something arranged, some are arranging for them.
What I had in mind was he encouraged others to give liberally. He said, who will, is that right? Read those verses. You got it there. Anybody? First Chronicles 29, 5 and 6.
I have it here.
All right, read it, please.
It says, for the gold work and the silver work and for all the work to be done by the craftsmen. Now, who is willing to consecrate himself today to the Lord?
So he says, who is willing to follow my example now? Who will do? Who will contribute to this? So it's not only a matter of the contribution he made, but it's also his encouragement of others to contribute. And others did. And you've got, following that, you have a list of the things that they gave. Right, First Chronicles 29. What else did he do?
He
prayed for the undertaking. And these were all very significant things. He couldn't do it, but he said, I'll help whoever's chosen to do it. And sometime in the church, there are things that we want to do that we're just not allowed to do. Somebody else has to do it. But the question is, how are we going to react? Are we going to help whoever does it? Do everything we can to advance the project? Or are we going to sit back and complain, grumble, and not do anything? All right. we cannot personally accomplish some good work, what can we do for those to do it? What are some things we would like to do that we're just not permitted to do? Would any of you ladies like to preach?
Oh, no. I did that when I was younger.
I'm sure that, yeah. I'm sure there's no woman anywhere wants to preach. All right. Why do women not preach? Has the Lord ever asked them to? Isn't that what he asked about David building the temple? Have I asked you to do that? God has not, and of course, in addition, they're prohibition. Ruth?
But once a lady told me one time, God gave me the ability, so he wants me to use that ability.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I lived out for years. Mm-hmm.
And one of the arguments I've run into on instrumental music is, God has given me the talent to play.
Yeah.
And if somebody else can get up and sing, why can't it, and use their talent in singing, which I can't do, why can't I use my talent to play on the piano?
Well, there's people that have talent to do a skateboard, or, talent to, there's all kinds of talent. Are we going to have all that? Are we going to have a three-ring circus?
Yeah.
Because they're talented.
The thing that
we can do it for the Lord.
Because we were in the Christian church where those things are, do exist, and were promoted. I always had question marks in my mind about even some of the stuff that I did, which is not according to the scriptures that I learned. But when David Tant pointed out to us, you have to have authority for what you do by using Noah and the ark, and have the authority to build it like he did, and about us. And I was hardly to tell. I mean, it just fell into place because we knew we had become troubled about so much reading out of order that just didn't ring true. That people just didn't have the right attitude. They were turning things upside down. We're going to build the last rolls. We're going to build a gymnasium to get people to come so they could see the results. And that was obviously the cart before the horse.
That's
where do you go? We were saying.
Yeah.
I said, we need to be out of there. And I said, but where do you go if you don't give up on God? And providentially,
that's another part of the door. Will you do something else?
David and Flora.
If we can't do that, God opened the door for you to do something.
That's right.
I think that's right. Just think about this morning. I had an opportunity years and years and years ago. To go an opportunity. It appeared to be an opportunity to go and help get the work started in Washington, D.C., where there had not been a church that was standing for the truth. And I wanted to do that. I thought, that's what the Lord wants me to do. Sure. Well, it just didn't work out for me to do it. I don't go into any details, but it just wasn't for me to do that. Pretty obvious. Well, instead, I'd always thought, I'm going to go work with small churches that are working diligently to try to grow. That's the kind of work I want to do. Instead, I went to a large church. But after a little while, we were supporting a number of men fully in various places where the church, when I went there, hadn't been doing anything much long back by. And I expect that I did more good encouraging the support for men than I would have done if I had been there. So I rather think that was right, as I've thought about it through the years, but I was disappointed at the time. It wound up, I think, probably putting me where I needed to be instead of where I thought I ought to be. Any other comment? Any other points? Yes, Mark?
I don't have this very fully formed, but I've finally come to the conclusion that I probably will never be a professional soccer player. It's taken me a while to get to that. But I wondered, as leaders or other roles, how to think about decisions, because you make those decisions, and really maybe we should just stop judging our decisions to do or try or set a goal based on how they turn out. Now, I don't think David would be judged harshly for wanting to build that temple.
No, no. Yeah. In fact, even Nathan thought that prophet.
Yeah, he agreed with
that
until he heard better. But
appropriate.
Yeah, but I think we sometimes set our goals and we live our lives way more disappointed than we ought to be, because what we thought our goal ought to be, what didn't turn out. Maybe I just said, well, I had the best intentions and godly thoughts in mind when I made that decision, but the outcome is, you know, the die's cast into the lap, but the outcome, you know, is for the Lord. And I guess when you get older, there are more and more of those things you realize. Yeah, I'd always kind of imagined I'd be doing this, and then it's pretty clear you're not ever going to do that. So.
We find out after. Yeah. On the moment, you think you can do something, and then later on you find out that was not.
Now, the providence of God is much better observed in retrospect than at the first time. So we just have to do the best we can and trust that it's what God would have us to do.
He said, lean not to our own understanding, but trust
Him. Right. I just, as I said, this lesson got me thinking back over my life. And I remember coming from upstairs down here to talk to the elders, tell them I want to go to Romania. Well, one of the elders said, well, I've been thinking about leaving. I'm moving. Oh, no, I can't leave and leave the eldership in that condition. So I didn't. Did I think we sent Kerry Keenan to support him there. And he probably did more good than I would have. So we just don't know. But it's not a matter of being bitter when something is forbidden us. It's a question of just, if it's a good work, help somebody else to do it. If I can't do it, let me help somebody else to do it. And see that the good work's done. Anything else on that?
So one thing, you know, they say when a door is closed, a window's open, you always look through the window.
Yeah.
Seriously. Because if we're not permitted to do something, that might be here at church. We can't preach, but we can go teach.
Absolutely. There's so many things.
So there's a lot of things, and you have to look at it from that perspective. If you want to write curriculum, you're not doing it here, you can go write curriculum somewhere else that's not connected to the church. But it's done in a way that, you know, will profit children or adults or whatever.
I know that, I was mentioning a while ago, that there are women who want to preach, and they're just so eager to preach. And yet I can name some women who, teaching children, probably accomplish more over a period of years than a preacher standing in the pulpit. Teaching children is a valuable, and I watch some of these teachers, and when I'm here at the building and see them, all the time they put into preparation to teach those children. And it's paid off at Ember Hills, but I think it'll pay off in eternity. Any other comment? Okay. All right. Let's see. Okay. Let's get one more. Okay. I remember what those are. I almost couldn't remember what they're about. Turn to 1 Samuel 30, verses 24 and 25. You remember when David came back, when the Philistines wouldn't let him go fight against Saul, which he wondered what he would have done. But anyway, he came back and found that the Amalekites had taken away the families of the men that were with David. And so he said, we've got to go chase them. Well, there were some men that weren't able to chase. So he said, you stay with the baggage. Those that are with the stronger can go with me, and we'll overtake the Amalekites and rescue our people. So that's what it did. Well, they had great success. And they came back with a lot of loot, a lot of bounty. And the question was, who gets it? Well, the men who had gone and fought said, we get it. These people that stayed here with the baggage should not have it. Somebody read it for us now, what David said. Ruth, you have it there? Read it, please.
All right, we will aid you in this matter.
But as his heart is, he goes down to the valley. So shall his heart be saved by the supplies. They shall share alike. So it was from that day forward. He made a dispatch and an ordinance for Israel to this day.
All right, so he set a policy that those who support the one who go are to be equally rewarded when there is a success. Most of you, I'm sure, are familiar with Philippians 4, 16, 17. Just tell me, somebody, what does that say?
Sure.
No, that's in the same verse, chapter, right real close, verse 13. But this is a little different.
Paul said,
what did Paul say, Jenna?
For even in Thessalonica, you sent a gift more than once for my needs. Not that I seek the gift itself, but I seek for the profit which increases to your account.
Okay. So you think as far as God was concerned, David was rewarded as much as Solomon for what was done. Absolutely. Those who make possible the work that others do share in the reward or in the credit or into their account. And that's something that I think the church here ought to be much aware of. I just rejoice so much in the work that Glenn Jones is doing, has done in Germany, and Robin Bauer has done in South Africa, and Roger, whatever your name is, in New York. Georgia just tells me constantly what good work he's doing. And that's to our credit as well as for their credit. It's not that we're doing such great work, but what we do is important to what they do. I'll tell you a little thing about my dad. When he was near the end, he was feeling pretty bad about it. He said, I've never gone overseas like Brother Disselkamp. And said, I've never started little churches like Third and Lee. They were both friends. I said, that's right, Dad. But if Urban Lee and Brother Disselkamp had been depending on, hadn't had churches like you preach for, depend on, they couldn't have done what they did. And if Brother Disselkamp had been depending on the little churches Brother Lee started for support, he couldn't have gone. So it takes what all of us do. And if we get back to something I said a little earlier, which is not religion, as you'll know, but it's amazing how much can be accomplished when nobody's concerned about who gets the credit. But we are thankful that the Lord is pleased with what we do. One of the men that came to Nigeria, they would raise more money than the rest who were coming. And his plan was, when he went to a church to speak, he asked the elders, "Now, I'm not asking for money out of treasury. I'd just like to ask the members to help me." So he'd present this picture of the work in Nigeria and the need that was there. And he said, "Now, I'm going to stand back at the door." And he said, if you want to go, I'll give you $10. But but I'll go if you give me $10. Well, he got a lot of $10 because they didn't want to go. So, but they did go. They did go with him. And that's one of the things I've taught preachers. In fact, I had experience not long ago, a man going to have to raise funds to work in New York City. I said, don't worry about it. I said, a lot of people want the gospel preached in New York. They can't go, but they can help you to go. And so you don't think yourself a beggar. You just think of yourself as enabling them to do what they want to do and what they have a responsibility to do in that kind of work. Okay, well, one more. When sickness interferes, who determined who would follow David as king?
God did.
And that verse was wrong on that. I'm going back and correcting the lesson too late. But it should be verse 5. God had chosen Solomon to be the king. Was he the heir apparent?
No.
Absalom was. Of course, he was dead. And actually, Adonijah was the oldest, apparently.
Still living.
Yeah, the oldest one still living. And he would have been the one you'd expect to be chosen. And he wanted it and arranged to be appointed. But Adonijah was. Whose responsibility was to see that Solomon was crowned? Who had to it. And for David, that Solomon was with the king. God did that. And so it was his responsibility to see that God's purpose was fulfilled. But what was David's physical condition? He was in pretty bad shape. He was cold. I love the King James Version that he's got no heat. He was cold and just near, it's kind of like near dead. Near dead. Alright? And the earth didn't keep warm. How did David learn that another son was being crowned? Alright. Nathan told Bathsheba. And then took care of this old man. They had Bathsheba go and mention. Nathan said, then watch, he thought, I'll come in. And they're dealing with it very cautiously, diplomatically. But they're getting the message to him. All right. What might be expected of David at this point? Your answers may be different from mine. What would you expect might be, and it's not in the book, it's not in the Bible, it's just from your imagination. I'm just sitting to take care of it.
Or you can say you take care of it.
Yeah, just go and do what you can. I just can't do it. I'm past doing it. I've done with some people that had some responsibilities that they should have risen to and done the best they could. But could David do it by himself? No. So, but what did he do? Whose help did he enlist? Okay, Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, and Benaiah. It was true that in his condition he probably couldn't do a whole lot, but he could call on some that could to get the job done. Yes.
Well, it occurred to me, he was still in his right mind, and he had a heart for God.
Yes.
And that's why he didn't say, I'm too old, you all take care of it.
Very good.
He recognized that he still was responsible for God's will.
And whatever strength we have left, mm-hmm. we use it mm-hmm. to accomplish God's purpose.
And, that's right.
And if it's not enough, that's between me and God. God can give me the strength to do what He expects me to do. He didn't expect me to do anything more than I have the strength to do. But He expects me to do all that I have the strength to do. Alright. What order did He give? Arranged for the coronation of Solomon. And what did He apparently do according to First Chronicles? It looks like the timing here is different. The chronology is different. But it just looks like He called an assembly of Israel to convert. It may have gotten better. And sometimes the responsibility can give us strength and energy that we didn't dream we had. And it just may be that God gave him the strength to accomplish this that he would not have had otherwise. Yes.
I say sometimes when you have that load off your shoulders and it's passed on to somebody else, it kind of gives you a second wind, too.
Yeah. But apparently he called an assembly. And what two things did he do for Solomon? I've got it. I put it up there. He charged him. And that just means he instructed him. He urged him. Admonished him. Told him what was expected of him. And what else? Again,
he prayed
for him. Do you have memories of spiritual encouragement given you by a parent? I have a letter we actually published in the book. That's the way I had it. A letter from my dad to my brother and me as he was dying, urging us to be faithful and saying how much it meant to him to leave us preaching the gospel. I can't read it without tears. It's a strong remembrance. And the point that I think we might make is that there's something we can do. Do you have memories of spiritual encouragement given you? And is there an advantage in putting it in writing? There really is. And I would encourage us to write a letter. There are two or three of these things I've encouraged you to do that I haven't done yet, but I'm going to try to get them done. To write a letter to anyone you feel like would be would benefit from it after you're gone. Of course, we're not, our dad has the advantage of foreseeing his death within the next few days. We don't always have that. We don't have one will. Too early to write something that they can't. I like these words of Longfellow. What then? Shall we sit idly down and say that night hath come? It is no longer day? Night hath yet not yet come. We're not quite cut off from labor by the fading light. Something remains for us to do or dare. Even the oldest tree some fruit may bear. For age is opportunity, no less than youth itself, though in another dress. And as the evening twilight fades away, the sky is filled with stars, invisible by day. I love those words. Okay, I guess that's about it. Yes. Somebody has something to say. I think I hear things when I don't hear them. All right.
Yes, she is.